Item A. Special recommendation on phase three, Crossing Kingdom Comprehensive Property Management Strategy, Crossing Kingdom Lake. Randy, let's go back something.
And I would ask Karen Wilson if you want to bring your team up, and you may want to use podium. We've got chairs up here as well for her to sit up here to sit
right at the mic.
At the head of the class.
Right at the mic.
With us?
Right at the mic. Yeah, I want you behind me.
One thing I noticed, you know, I said every one of these seniors, even for the roof repair, was last time.
We didn't get any slides in this presentation, did we? We had this stuff here last time.
Yeah, but I don't think they gave us any additional for this.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Karen Wilson. I'm with the Sonnet Company, and I'm the team leader for our strategic plan that you all have hopefully read and thoroughly discussed and studied by now. We're here today as a follow-up to our presentation and subsequent board meeting. I'd like to introduce our team. Beside me is Roscoe Van Zandt, who is actually the project manager. Bruce Brown works with us on the team in analysis. Today we have Paul Rogers, who is of the Candy Hanger. He's an attorney that has helped us develop a new lease document, and he will go over that today in some detail. Also, you may recall from our last meeting, we have Jim Mansky with TVG, a land planning firm out of Dallas, and Mark Steer, Turner, Colley, and Braden, an engineering firm out of Dallas as well. We have a list of questions that were presented to us, and we're going to go through our recommendations in some detail, so as well as the lease document. So I would encourage you to ask questions, and hopefully you will make this as interactive as possible. Thank you.
I appreciate everybody letting us speak again. We don't have a formal presentation like we had for phase three, but in the last few weeks since we presented, we were approached with some issues and some clarifications that were in the report that we wanted to address. So I'm going to try to explain some of the things that were a little unclear and present some more information that will help you understand the theory behind the recommendations that we have. Some of the clarifications will certainly be the residential methodology that we presented, of course. We had a direct question as to, from staff, as to, so what does that mean for somebody sitting on a lease right now with a few years left on their lease? And so I'll present a bunch of numbers. We'll walk through options that would entail. The other question we had was, why did you use 35% discount? Where did it come from? What's the methodology? What's the reason? So forth. So we'll talk a little bit about that. There was some clarification needed on the commercial, and I apologize. The report is not as clear and did not spell out the assumptions that we had hoped. The message did not come across the way we had hoped, so we'll talk a little bit about that, specifically the difference between on-water and existing facilities and those future and off-water facilities. Just to give you a reminder, this is the methodology that we presented. I'm not even going to bother with the pointer. I want to reiterate that the TVA, you'll see the baseline here in a minute, the TVA suggested this, and we really just mimicked the TVA. We pushed it out 5 years, but they suggested starting at 3%. And in April of 2007, the board is supposed to revisit that methodology. And in fact, if you look at the methodology that was adopted by the board, it actually goes to 4% in 2008. What we've done is basically push that out an additional 5 years, effectively lower that rate down to the lessees. In addition to that, well, let me just say, we follow the same methodology, and that is to increase 1% every 5-year cycle. until you get to a target rate of 6%. We have suggested and recommended 6%. The board may find that that is not the number that they want to go to. In addition to that, because of the financial impact, and if you look, and you'll see some numbers shortly, those rent numbers start climbing pretty quick if you start making assumptions that the land around the lake will appreciate. It will, it has, it will continue to, period. We have offered a discount in here that starts at 65%, or you're basing it on 35% of the value, and we're talking about return. And that slowly bleeds off. And what that basically does, you'll see here shortly, it enables you to amortize the invested dollars that you've had. Next slide, please. Two additional slides. I just wanted to show you. I'm not sure if we talked about this in the past, but if you kind of looked right now at the current leases out there, you'll see that about 90% of them are paying about $1,000 or less. You basically have four categories of lessees out at the left. You can see over here on the right, about 30%. We're paying $500 to the minimum, and then between $500 and $750 is another tranche, and between $750 and $1,000 is another tranche. And then you've only got about 14% of the total lessees paying that higher dollar rent up there. The maximum is 70, according to 2004 numbers, are actually at that cap. And then that graphically just kind of shows you the segregation. Next slide, please. This kind of follows the same theory. As was commented on earlier, what happens to a $200,000 lot? Well, you see that about 83% of the lots out at the lake, according to the assessor values, are $100,000 or less. So you've got a tremendous amount of the properties not in that high-end range. And that does trickle through when we start looking at the methodology and how that's going to affect actual lease rates. It'll become important to keep this in mind. Next slide. This is what Michael has called a stick man figure. Let me see if I can.
There's no stick man.
Yeah, the stick man wouldn't fit. Just the bottom of my roster, there's a lot of numbers, so I'm going to try to clear this up and feel free to interact. I'm sitting on a lot right now, and we're going to assume right here that they've got 4 years left on a lease. If that land value is assumed to be $85,000, and by the way, they're currently paying $650, which is not tied to this number. In effect, this is the rate that they're paying right now. Under our proposal, they have two options. They can opt to a new lease, and this was the methodology that would be implemented, 3% for the first 5 years, 4%, 5%, and then it would basically stay at 6%. The discount shown right here. Under our plan, you sign a brand new lease, and you'd be paying $893 based on this value. Or you can stay over here when your lease expires. Your lease then would be based upon this year's rate. So you're looking at $893 here versus you continue to pay $650 and then all of a sudden you're going to market rate. Now, the big catch in this is the assumption that this land value will continue to increase at 6%. And that's key to keep in mind.
What if you use 6% and that's, not probably realistic?
I'm sorry, what's it?
Why would you use 6% appreciation? Isn't that what you were just saying?
Actually, I think if you remember the October study that came out that looked at the past 10 or 11 years or something, it came out 3 years ago that went back. It's actually been over the last 10 years more than 7% on average. The last couple of years, the appreciation rates have been in the double digits at the Apostle Kingdom. If you also remember the phase two study showed a graph that talked about, that showed, inflation rates at a CPI versus a 6% versus what we found across the country on waterfront property that's up into 12, 15, 14%.
If you just take raw numbers of sales price, whether there are any appraisal or any theoretical figures, I'm saying if you take that, I didn't say did you, I said if. The lot, 5 lots back from my house 4 years ago, sold for $60,000. Last December, just before Christmas, it sold for $195,000. Just a lot.
So that's close to 6%?
Not really, exactly.
Well, and another point to keep in mind, it's a very important point to understand is we see developers, we understand the demand out there for land and lots and access to the lake. So, there's a question about the demand. at all. But what you're dealing with also is a finite number of lots that happen to be sitting on the most valuable property out of PK, and that is the shoreline. Next slide, please. This, you know, it's a little zigzag, but that's because you start with the rate here, it's locked for 5 years, and this curve is basically a percentage of the land value that's established at point one. So the percentage actually would decrease if that land continues to increase. But what I've done is I've put on a moving average line, and this will show you a couple of things. It will show you that if you go with the TVA, it goes straight up the market without a discount, you rise to that target rate pretty quick. Now, you don't ever reach it because you're dealing with a five-year trailing number. So, in other words, if the lot's worth $5,000 today, you basically rent on that, it increases in value, your return goes down. And that's why it falls short of 50%, you really never achieve over. Our discount enables somebody who's invested here to amortize their lot in investment over time. Now, eventually, you're going to get somewhere to the same place. But what we've done is we've just moved that out for a period of years. This right here shows 50 years. And then again, you know, you can see that even out here, you're just north of 4% to the PRA. And the other big assumption to keep in mind is this is a 6% annual increase in the land. It could be more, it could be less. But that's the theory. Next slide, please. Okay, we talked a little bit about this. If we go to actual lot value versus the assessor values, and we've talked every time we presented about the difference between the assessor values out there and actual market values, fair market values, unfair market values, value is a value. We found across the board that the assessor values out there are substantially lower than the actual lot prices, you know, when you look at the market. And also the appraisal consultants we talked to just flat out said those values that they give on the rent roll are not reliable numbers. So, and again, and, you know, I've said this before to this board, is we're trying to get you to understand that you're managing a portfolio of assets that right now you don't even know what that portfolio is worth. It's like planning for retirement if you never check your bank account. So we've chosen a number that will actually take into consideration the big variance between what's considered to be value, the number on the rolls that the rent is currently based on and what the actual rent would be. We also chose this number, and that was an example. I think we started with 50% and came down to 35%. Because of the recognition of the investment that the lessees have made in their leaseholds, and we wanted to at least have them the ability to amortize those investment dollars for a substantial useful life. And last but not least, in all reality, it's a judgment call, and I'm going to show you a graph that will tell you kind of where that judgment call comes in. Next slide, please. This is the first 10 years, okay, 2008 to 2018. Again, with the same underlying assumptions that we've made throughout. This bottom line here is basically the baseline that's in place right now with the TVA study and the rental cap in place. This line, I'm colored line, I'm sorry, this blue or purple line, is the removal of that cap rate. The yellow line here represents our recommendation over the first 10 years. Now, a few things will make this change, certainly the assumption of land appreciation. This line is overall about right where the BRA is sitting right now in projections if they really didn't do anything in cumulative standpoint. And we did that for a reason, because we did not want to create a substantial financial impact across the board in the short term. Next slide, please. If you take this out for 30 years, you can see that our recommendation stays pretty solid down here, but then it grows pretty quickly and then becomes in line with the market recommendations from the TVA. As you increase the discount, this line will move up and down. The lower the discount, the higher the line. If you move this up to about 45%, you're dealing with a line up in here, which is substantially higher dollars than that people are counting on right here. Next slide. So that's why. Okay, commercial leases. This is a point of a little bit of confusion that I kind of want to talk about a bit. Underlying the assumptions that we made with the commercial recommendations, there's basically two assumptions. One, either the BRA is going to continue to own the improvements at infinitum. Let's say a lessee goes into default, the improvements come back. We found across the board that those concession agreements are substantially different values and rates than is as if somebody comes on, puts the dollars into the docks and marinas. For the existing, there was some confusion here, and we never intended to say that the people that are the current marine operators or commercial operators be kicked off their land and not be allowed to renew. What we do believe, though, is that the BRA should contain control the improvements down the road and allows the market to take a bear on how those commercial leases are carried out. The benchmarks that we found is if you assume that a commercial operator has invested the dollars and owns all the improvements and is paying a fee for the commercial dock, then across the board we found with all of our benchmarks that about 46% of their gross sales is a valid percentage rent to be charged as well. For future facilities, we stand by the fact that we truly believe that the BRA should get a competitive bid for any new facilities and work on concessionary agreements and maintain control of those facilities down the road. So, if you want to mention anything there, guys? Next slide, please. I should already talk about this a little bit. Off-water facilities. These are the HVAC companies, et cetera, that are out on Parkway 36 or around the lake. In all reality, without a understanding future use of a lot of that land, it's difficult to really judge what lease rate should be. And the more that we look at this, the more we've decided that these need to be negotiated based on the value of the land, and that's going to be dictated by land use, of course, but specifically on a case-by-case basis to move forward and start renewing leases.
Roscoe, can I interject something?
Please.
And I wanted to explain some of this. We had a lady that came that said something at one point about there not being restaurants at the lake. And there's an economic feasibility for certain leases. So when we break it from on-water facilities to off-water facilities and we take it on a case-by-case basis, it will give us the ability to determine the highest and best use for that property where we're not running people out of business. Now, having said that, there are certain people that may not be able to afford a lease on a piece of land because the best use for that land may not be the use that they've had it for years. And let me just, and I know that's going to scare some people, but let me just preface it by saying, on a piece of land that's zoned for an office building, you don't put a snow cone shack. And so that's one of the reasons why, and Roscoe and I talked about this a lot, about trying to break it out between, instead of lumping all of our commercial leases into one lump sum, we break it into on-water and off-water facilities, and we can take them on a case-by-case basis. I personally like the percentage rents because it is a true indicator of what the market's bearing on that specific use. However, having said that, even a percentage rent may not pay us what the best use for that land is, and those are going to be some decisions that we're going to have to make. So, Ross, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's what I wanted to.
This is a workshop. I'm supposed to interrupt. Next slide, please. We've got several slides coming here. We were asked to relist a lot of the recommendations we pulled out of the study and talk to them, and then Pollard's going to get up and talk a little bit about the why we recommend that you go with new lease documents and the goods and the bads of that. and then we're going to talk about some of the implications of some of the recommendations. So this is nothing new that you guys have not seen, so I'm just going to try to go through these. If you need to jump in, please do. First and foremost, and we have drilled it, adopt a strategic decision. You've got to have a master plan for your assets out there. It's the only way you're going to be able to make management decisions to get your end goal. Like I said, right now, you're managing a portfolio, and you do not know what the true value is. Set a baseline. You don't have to reappraise every lot every year, but you need a baseline. We have talked through counsel back and forth, many legal opinions about the goods and the bads of selling versus leasing, and so clearly we recommend that you continue to lease these assets. We've gone with a minimum of 30-year term, financing reasons, of course. We stop at a 50-year term, and I think when we get into part, we'll talk more about the legal implications of kind of why we've chosen that series of years. And again, update the lease documents in, for industry standards, use concession agreements and percentage rents as case by case and as we've talked about. And I think the next slide, we're not there yet, sorry, apologies. Again, long range development goals for the study areas. Jim has gone in great detail, looking at the land out there, potential uses and so forth. And come up with study areas that will help enhance the largest chunks of the BRA assets long term. We want to take that land plan and recommend that you take that future use, put some dollars, infrastructure, and revenue projections to it, and have a portfolio management strategy in place. All of this is to better preserve and utilize the resources that you control out there. And again, we believe that you should remove the cap, go to a market-based system, and provide the incentive for all the present lessees. Any comment? Next slide, please. Again, some of these are competitive, use competitive bids, concessionary agreements for all new on-water facilities, and again, in conjunction with boat loading studies, that's a little up in the air whether these are actually on the water or off the water. But again, we believe that you should go to some type of concessionary agreement with these. Standardized lake surface fees, we've talked about this quite a bit. With public recreation systems, we believe public recreation areas, we believe that can be self-sustaining with no cost of BRA. There's national groups out there that you can enter into concessionary agreements with that will bring synergy across the lake to all the public recs and offer a higher standard of services. And again, all that would do is produce revenue for the BRA. In conjunction with the master plan, Scenic Cove, Clearview alluded to earlier, is a beautiful area that needs to be utilized effectively and enhance public rec, as is the barge yard, we believe. We do, however, believe that you should preserve long-term public access to the shoreline through Harvey Area 4, but that potentially should not affect the use of it. And again, this was has been brought up of late and is a point in front of the board right now at Sandpoint Northview. We believe those assets pose an incredible liability. It's not the highest and best use of the site in conjunction with the land plan. That site needs to be looked at. The structures need to be removed from that site.
Next slide, please.
We believe a lot of the grasslands and lake islands may be able to be utilized as wetland mitigation banking and wetland preserves. We do not believe that automatic options to renew. You should not handcuff yourself down the road, and there's some reasons for that, and that is that you just simply don't, and Paula will talk about this more. You don't know what's going to happen down the road with regards to the BRA's utilization of the resources, capital requirement demands, placed on it. We do believe that if the inspections program needs to be ramped up to ensure a higher level of compliance. There should be strict construction requirements across the board. And again, these, when you have a land use plan, certain areas may have higher standards of construction than other areas. And again, as we said in our report, I believe that the select service fee should be reviewed annually as part of an annual budget to manage the assets of the lake. Next slide, please. Paula Rogers with Canty and Hanger, is counsel we've hired to review the lease issues, and I'll turn it over to you for now. Just push the button.
Push the button. Good afternoon. Let's go to the next slide. One of our charges was to elevate the lease forms to the level that's commensurate with the activity that's going on at Fossil Cumin Lake. Other than the rent structure, we have not introduced any new concepts into the new lease form. What we are simply trying to do is clarify what the rights and obligations of the VRA and its lessees are. So, significant changes. First, the lease premises. One of the issues that is really not addressed very clearly in the old lease form is the relationship that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has with respect to usage of lake property. As you know, there is a band around the shoreline on the VRA property that's subject to the FERC license. The FERC license gives the VRA and the public certain rights. So what we wanted to do was clarify what the VRA has a right to lease and what it doesn't have a right to lease. FERC Council has recommended that with respect to the residential leases, that lease the area that is off the project lands, which you clearly have a right to lease, and rather than lease the project lands, that it be permitted or licensed. The term would be the same. But the usage is restricted to access to the lake and then to approved improvements. With the commercial leases, the license specifically gives rights for marinas, so the entire area can be leased, including the setback. Okay, next slide. We've talked about term. The Staudt recommendations is built to a 30 to 50 year term. I think there's been some questions about why 50, why not 100. There's several reasons. As a river authority, you do have certain restrictions on the use of your property, unlike a private developer. And the court cases have not been definitive on this, other than an attorney general opinion reviewing the College District, similar circumstances, where they said that a 50-year term did not violate or did not constitute a complete divestiture of control by the River Authority. Also, 50-year terms seem to be what you see with respect to developments by municipalities, where they will lease land for convention centers and that kind of thing. So it seemed to fit pretty well, 50-year term. As Roscoe pointed out, these longer terms allow for the financability of the project with a certain amount of cushion.
Are you implying that longer than 50 does constitute or imply divestiture?
Yes. Annual rent, next slide. We've already gone through that. Next slide. Delivery of the lease premises. I think it's important from the standpoint of making sure that the liabilities are properly put in the right compartments, that there's a, as is typical with any ground lease, and frankly any lease, commercial lease, that the land is being leased on an as-is-where-is basis. The landlord's not making any specific representations or warranties as to the condition, the use of the property. And so we're in the new lease form, we want a complete disclaimer of any representation or warranty as to the condition. Usage. next slide. Right. The usage was kind of addressed in different sections of the lease, and so all we've really done here is consolidate that. In a residential lease, obviously, it's only for residential recreational purposes. Commercial lease, we have a specified use and only that use. And then you have the usual restrictions, the restrictions that you've had in your lease form. Nothing really new there. The next slide, indemnity. Again, this is something that has evolved over the last 30 years, and I dare say you hard to find any contract that doesn't apply to assign liabilities and potential losses by use of an indemnity. The old lease really didn't address it as clearly as it should be, and certainly not to the extent that leases today do. So we've added a very clear indemnification by the lessee with respect to any losses that are or damages incurred by the BRA because of activities on the leased property. Next slide. Taxes, utilities, maintenance, no real change here. All of this is the responsibility of the lessee. You pay the taxes, utilities, and to maintain the property, including the improvements. Next slide, hazardous substances. Not really addressed in the old lease because environmental contamination is a fairly recent phenomenon, recent in the sense that it's about the last 30 years. And so in the new lease, we've actually gone into great detail to put restrictions on activities that could possibly be a violation of EPA standards, state TCEQ standards, etc. And the BRA is indemnified from any activities that might violate those laws.
One question on the way that's worded. Prohibits any activity. Does this imply that a marina cannot sell gas?
No.
But gasoline?
Sale of gasoline is not prohibited.
No, it says prohibits any activities which include hazardous substance. Gasoline is a hazardous substance.
Oh, I see what you mean. That is not the intent.
I'm looking at your language.
You're right. Yeah, I see the ambiguity. Well, I stand corrected. That is not the intent.
Okay.
It's only to the extent that the sale or the usage, the storage, violates the any environmental laws.
The ability to fix.
Okay, next slide. Insurance. Insurance wasn't really addressed. And insurance obviously is a big deal because that's how you make sure the liabilities and cost of paying liabilities is covered. So in the new lease, we're very specific about the types of insurance that a lessee must carry, both property insurance and liability insurance. And we have certain standards with respect to it being A-rated insurance company. The certificates of renewal would be delivered to the BRA so that they can monitor the insurance is being covered all the time. Next slide. Assignment and subletting. No real change here other than we wanted to put in this ability for the BRA in when they are looking at consenting to an assignment of the lease, which is in effect a sale of the lease, that the BRA has a right as part of the condition to consenting to the assignment that they could increase the rent to market rates. Next slide, holding over. Not addressing the lease, and it's really just kind of very standard. I mean, at least what do you do if the lease ends and the tenant doesn't leave? So we've got a kind of a financial incentive for them to leave that you would typically see, and that is the rent goes up by 150% of what was being charged. Next slide. Lessee financing. Again, we address this both in the old lease and in the new lease with some revisions. Basically, you're recognizing that the tenant, if they want to build, is going to want to finance that. The lender is going to have certain requirements that they can get a lien on the leasehold estate. But we want to make sure that there is no limitation that the land itself, the BRA's title to the land, is being offered as collateral, and that they will not subordinate to the lender's like. Damage and destruction. This was really not, has not been adequately addressed in the old lease, but we make it clear that a lessee has an obligation to repair and restore damaged property. The rent is not reduced during that period. What we did, I mean, realistically, in the last 5 years of the lease, if there's substantial damage, it doesn't make sense to require a lessee to put any more investment in the property. So there's an option by either party to terminate the lease. Construction, next slide. No real changes here. Any construction requires the approval of the BRA. They must receive plans and specs, make sure all the permits have been acquired, including FERC approval of any improvements within project areas. And there's a specific prohibition against any mobile homes or manufactured homes without BRA approval. Next slide. Yeah.
That's not to say the intent is that there should be no manufactured homes in the plan, but it's saying that if you are in the right control where those areas are going to be manufactured homes.
Ownership of improvements. This is an item that's gotten some attention, and in both lease documents addressed it, but we want to make it absolutely clear that at the end of the lease, during the term of the lease, the lessee, the ownership of the improvements remains with the lessee. It's their responsibility, and they're the ones that are in possession and should maintain the improvements. But at the end of the lease, there has to be some kind of resolution as to ownership. And we make it clear that the improvements automatically vest in the BRA. That's one of the reasons for a longer-term lease. You extend it out to fully amortize improvements. And this would be very typical of any long-term ground lease. Next slide. Eminent domain. This is something that we felt like we ought to address just to avoid any argument that just because the BRA, who has power of condemnation, is the lessor, that they are not releasing any right to exercise eminent domain if it became appropriate. Next slide. Dispute resolution. We thought this would be healthy to have, and that is a methodology for how you settle disputes. And first, it would be informal, and then through some negotiation, and then mediation, which is, frankly, if you were to go to the courthouse, the first thing the judge would say is, have you mediated? Next slide. Waiver of jury trial. We just feel like, and we always recommend this with our landlords as part of managing dispute resolution, that if it can't be settled by mediation, that it be, and a suit is filed, that it be a case before a judge and not a jury. Next slide. No personal liability. Basically, it was not addressed in the old lease. The new lease basically says that the BRA's liability would be limited to its interest in the property. This eliminates argument about consequential damages, and one that I thought you all would very much appreciate, that officers, directors, and employees are not personally liable. I think that's it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Can you give your perspective on where we were from a risk thing with the old leases versus where this is trying to take us?
Well, I think that the old lease covered the significant points. The problem was ambiguity, lack of clarity. It's kind of a lawyer's dream. I mean, they can weave the argument several ways, and so what we've done is try to clarify, and so reduce the risk of ambiguity and an argument about what are the terms of this lease. So I think it's risk management that we've hopefully brought down.
Are there any default provisions added, changed to the lease?
No. And that's why I didn't add it. I mean, it's the typical resolution of default. That is, you, of course, always have the right of termination. You have the right not to terminate, but to go on to the property and cure whatever default exists and be reimbursed. You have a right to expel without terminating and to continue to demand rent. So those really didn't change from what we had.
Okay.
Yes.
I would have appreciated having a copy of your highlights of the new leases before the meeting. I'd like a copy of this PowerPoint today if I could. Now, do you have the new lease agreements drawn up, and this is just the highlights of the additions?
These are only the highlights, and we do have it in draft form. But it's an evolving draft, so I would hesitate to put anything out at this point. But obviously, we're going to come to a conclusion when the board adopts it. Any more questions? Okay, thank you.
Next slide.
We were asked to kind of go through and verbalize some of the potential impacts on some of these recommendations that we've heard from the public and landowners and staff as well as board members. The essential lease rate methodology allows a gradual move toward market rate with minimal near-term negative impacts to residents and allows for longer terms. That speaks for itself. And please, you know, this is an iterative part. If you have any questions about this, then I need to get you guys comfortable with what we're talking about. Lifting of the cap on current rate methodology eliminates the progressive nature of the cap and provides incentive to move toward a new rate methodology. I think that we showed through some of our charts and in phase two as well that the cap favors the more expensive leaseholds. It also creates a declining return to the BRA on its asset. Competitive bid process, concession agreements for the commercial facilities. We'll talk a little bit about that. There's concern that the invested equity in some of the commercial operators at present would be lost and they'd be forced off. It's clearly not the intent. I hope that I clarified that earlier. So if I haven't, please address that.
Well, can we look at... I mean, I know this is going to be a topic of conversation, so I think we ought to get into it at this point. Can we look at some different scenarios under your recommendation?
On the commercial?
Yeah, I'm not on the residential. Because you know, one of the biggest concerns that I've heard, and I've gotten an awful lot of phone calls and emails, and is the impact that option 7 has in regards to obtaining financing. So if you could help explain that a little bit.
Actually, we'll get there, but we can address it now. As you're aware, the board is approached by a lender who could not currently, under their underwriting criteria, loan out in the market because of the 20-year term. And we felt it was in the best interest of the people to have the ability to shop for the best interest rates on their mortgages. That's one of the reasons behind the 30-year. As far as financeability, each lender has their own underwriting criteria. We've heard comments about the proposed methodology will create an uncertainty and lenders won't be able to underwrite. It's completely opposite that. Right now, if you read the lease, there's more uncertainty than there is under this methodology. Did I miss anything?
Which we have
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what they're financing, I mean, that would be true in a perfect world. What we have now is we have people that have financed an ownership of and land that they don't own. And so I think what they're concerned about is it going to put them upside down, and is it going to throw the market into a tailspin if we're now moving, even though it's through this discounted rate, to a more market-based rent that changes on five-year increments. Our lender is going to be able to look at it and loan on it, not knowing what the fixed expenses of that, quote, tenant are going to be.
Well, first of all, they don't know what those are now.
Okay, let's be clear.
Let me interject. Not the bank is, those interested in is
whether or not they have an asset that should the lessee, in this case, or in the case of a conventional mortgage, should the lessee default. In this particular situation, what we're dealing with is an increased hoard market over the course of 30 years, which is the base term of the first lease. At the end of that lease term, with the existing lessees, should they elect to go to the 30-year lease, they would still be at a rate that is 40% below market. If after the 1 or 2 year period during which an existing lessee can market or sell its leasehold interest to another party, if they sell beyond that point and somebody is looking for financing, the other thing to keep in mind here is that even with the new lease term going into place at the end of that 2 year term, that lessee is still starting at whatever the rate is, whether it's 4 or 5 or 6%. During the first 5 years, it's 3%, then moves to 4, then to 5, then to 6. What I'm trying to say is even selling that leasehold interest at market rates at that point, from my perspective, the mortgagee, the bank in this case, would be comfortable that what they're selling is a below-market rent, even under the new lease, which gives comfort to the lender that they'll be able to market that on their own should that lessee default.
Okay, and so after the 2 year window, if someone were to sell, then the rate goes automatically to the 6% of the market rate.
That is not what our recommendation is. It stays at the 3, 4, 5, 6, again, with the consideration that even at that point, the existing lessees, in most cases, have made an investment in the property. So even selling that lease after the window period of 2 years, there's still not as much of a discount. We're not going to 65, 60, and so on.
But you're going to full market value.
Full market value, but still at the 3, 4, 5, 6.
4, 5%.
Okay. So your thought at the full market value then is that the lender's going to look at the true value of the improvement and not the lot.
They're going to look at two things, the true value of the marketability of that asset.
Okay.
And that asset includes the improvements, as well as what is still a significant discount in rent. So in other words, if at the end of 3 years an existing lessee decides to sell his leasehold interest and that window of moving the new lease over or the new methodology over to the new lessee has expired, they'll still be able to sell a leasehold interest that is at a 50% discount, because they'll be at 3%,
okay,
instead of the market rate of 6%.
Okay.
Would this, in the case of like a death of the lessee, would this vest with their beneficiaries, this 30-year contract?
You said no.
Typically, a leasehold does not vest. That's personal property.
Here's my... Typically, the death of the lessee would constitute a termination. Usually, the bargain has been made with the lessee themselves and not with their estate or other beneficiaries.
Okay. Well, here's a problem I see with that.
If you have a lease, and it doesn't matter what the lease costs, but if you have a lease that you go and you put $300,000 worth of improvements on, and I spend my $300,000, and you know, 3 years from now, which if I'm still on this board, maybe a probability I drop dead of a heart attack. I want to know that my $300,000 does not immediately transfer to the benefit of the BRA.
And there are ways to address that. Yeah, I think that's a very good point, and there's certainly ways we can do that. That is that a transfer by will would not constitute an event of default.
Okay, well,
that's a good point.
Yeah, I don't know.
Residentially, certainly.
I don't know how everybody else feels about it.
But otherwise, you force them all to go to a corporate entity to own it, which mm-hmm. never does.
You don't want to
buy that policy. Right. Now, and the lessee can protect themselves in the sense that they could create a family trust or entity to actually be the lessee. So the death of the user would not be an issue.
Well, we can do it through corporations and family trusts, but we also need to recognize the fact that there are some people at the lake that have been there a long time that are not sophisticated. And I just, you know, if they've made an investment, a substantial investment in the lake, then I think that investment needs to inure to the benefit of their beneficiaries and not to the BRA.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good point, very valid.
Okay.
And probably without having to sign a new contract. Are you saying, you know, for somebody, because, you know, if I were 80 years old and I'm going to have to re-sign this 30-year lease, that's ridiculous. You know.
Yeah, maybe you have a clause in the lease that says, you know, upon the death, the beneficiary has 12 months to either accept the existing lease or to reject it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, but I think they need to be given the opportunity to do that. Lily, do you?
I mean, I think based on what the current expectations are, there probably needs to be some level of ability to transfer that to people's children.
Okay. Next slide.
At this point, we got a point of contention about the elimination of subleases. Let me explain the emphasis of this. There are certain areas of the lake that are very valuable, and they have commercial subleases on them right now. BRA is not benefiting from the increase in value of being on that particular land. We recommend that they not go to any more subleases. That's not to say that we are suggesting these people be displaced or kicked off. However, with the establishment of a master plan, there are higher and better uses of certain areas of land, and it may be that these subleases can be relocated to areas that are more beneficial for them and for the BRA. In addition here, there's septic issues to consider, and our engineer and land planner here discuss those if you have any questions. We also believe that all those third-party leases with an operator have the ability to put BRA added liability upon the BRA.
I'm going to try to get some conversation going here. This is a big issue. I got a phone call from the governor's office this week, and I got a phone call from several people that have subleases up at the lake that feel that the Staubach report recommends that we discontinue subleases. Now, the data I don't think has been definitive. I don't think Staubach's recommending that we go out and we not do any new subleases, but we have a fairly significant population. And Phil, I don't remember. I know you gave it to me, and I did not bring it with me. I don't remember what the specific number was, but I'll give you one example. The Sandbar Resort has, was it 90 full-time? Or is it 120?
We've had it backwards.
Okay, but Sandbar's got, I think it may be 115, 120 subleases, yet there are only 90 septic systems. And it sits on
68.5 acres.
14 acres?
68.
Oh, 60 acres. Okay. And they're obviously concerned that we're just going to say, hey, you guys have got to go away, and the average investment is probably somewhere between $80,000 and $140,000 up there for mobile homes.
It's actually less. I mean, you can go on the internet and see some that are in the $40,000 and $50,000 range.
Well, is your recommendation that we do away with these subleases now, that we do away with it at the end of the term of the lease, or that we leave that option available?
I don't think the board is equipped right now to make a decision, put a date on that. What I think is imperative to understand is the Sandbar, for example, you've got 68 acres sitting on the peninsula. That's very valuable real estate, and you're getting $14,000 a year in rent for 68 acres on the peninsula.
Well, that doesn't change the fact that, I mean, we have a lease agreement, and if the lease agreement comes up for renewal, then we could, you know, we can set whatever price we want to set.
If the BLA is equipped with a plan for the peninsula, and it's decided that that is the highest and best use for that, that's one thing. If it's decided that the highest and best use is to not to allow all those septic systems on that 68 acres on the peninsula, then decisions can be made in terms of relocating or restructuring that entire deal. And you've got about 100 subleases in Sandbar, paying between $135 and $175. If anybody knows the right answer, please. In the range. Okay, and they pay how much per lease? Somewhere $130 to $170 a month. Okay, so about two Sandbars. So the owners get $14,000, they're making about $200,000. And like the issue that I have as a real estate guy is as the increases in those subleases go up and they're paying more and more to be out there, what does that do for the DRA? Well, there's a variance in money there.
And I, as a real estate guy, I understand the variance in money. And, yeah, I would love to capitalize on that. But I also am not equipped at this point to look at 100 people and say, sorry, we just determined it's in our best interest that you lose your investment and go away.
The intent is not to say...
Okay. The intent is not to say that you go away, and this is where I'm trying to go. I want to determine what the intent is over the period. Over a period of is it 10 years? Is it 50 years? Is it 30 years? Because we have a group of people out there right now, and their perception is they're about to lose their homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is somewhat of an urgent issue that, you know, it's a little bit of a wildfire, and I'd like to at least.
The intent is to give the BRA flexibility. And we can't say it, stand here today and say it's 10 years or 15 years or it's next month. I don't think any of us anticipate it's a near-term situation. But based upon the land plan, we believe, even at the high level, there's going to be some flexibility in certain parts of the portfolio. And this is one of those, especially when you've got the liability and environmental issues that are so great in some of these subleases. Put you at risk beyond, you know, forget the runaway. It's the risk associated with these types of properties that need to be managed over time. There may be opportunities for relocation to improve the situation for everyone. We're not that far into it, but no, we don't anticipate that it's near term, but what we're after is flexibility for the BRA so you all can make decisions over time that are better decisions. We strongly suggest don't lock these subleases in for 30 to 50 years.
Do we know when that lease is up again?
Sure.
I'm sorry. I'd love to be able to read that, but
it's December 31st, 2012.
Oh, okay. 6 years. 6 years.
Plenty
of 2012. Yeah, hopefully we'll have a couple. I've got a couple others though that are going to be up in 9 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 8.
Oh.
Let me
express my feelings on all this. To me, when you say new leases, to me, if someone has been there for so many years, to me that's still an old lease. A new lease is something that doesn't exist. Let's see if I'm trying to explain myself here. But this reminds me of the Supreme Court's decision that I can take your property and give it to this guy over here because I can make better use of it. And to me, the people that have these leases, whether they're subleases or leases, I don't think we should be careful.
But Ruben, let me ask you a question. If you were in a
bargain with those, because to me, they leased it with some expectation, and to just do something, just take it away from them, you need to think about that.
Ruben, let me ask you a question. Are you in an apartment, and you sign a lease? When that lease expires, you need to sign what the apartment dwellers present you when you find another apartment.
We're having this discussion. To me, this is a state, this is not a private business. Quasi-government thing.
You want to address it?
I used to rent a house. I had some rental stuff. To me, that's different than this organization here.
In that case, can I get this organization to subsidize my house payment?
I have some problems.
Did you hear my question? My question is, in that case, can I get this organization to subsidize my house payment?
Well, but it's not just an apartment complex. I mean, these people have made capital improvements to a sublease, and they need the opportunity to not just be wiped out in regards to the money that they've invested. So,
I had the same problem with 9/11.
Well,
I would have never invested this kind of money on some property that I'm leasing. I mean, it would never occur to me to do that. But anyway, to me, there's a difference between the private business and this organization here.
We all have the leases here, and the sell lease is up, we read it.
That's all there is to it. We all have the lease that we've got with them. At the end of that lease,
it's a new deal.
We negotiate a new lease.
And that's the way I do it. I thought building on lease property now. That's what I do. My options run out, and I'm at the market value.
Okay, but you're in the private sector.
Now, I don't understand why you want me to subsidize what that is just because it's a state.
Right.
We're already giving us
something. When this board started this whole practice to begin with, the people did or whoever did, but wasn't one of the things that we were talking about was looking at the underperforming asset that we're responsible for managing. Was it? That's what I thought it was.
I want to separate the definition between performing and underperforming, because you're right. At the end of that term, we could go to them and we could say, you know what, guys? You were paying $14,000 a year, and now you're paying $114,000 a year, and it's an economic term that we can set on that. And I'm okay with that. What I'm concerned about, and to some extent it's buyer beware, at the end of that term we have the ability to say, go away. And those people will lose something, Ash Kyle, man. You know, if they've got a home there and have been there,
well, they can have it back at market value then, based on what we're doing at that particular time. I would think that's the way we'd do it.
Well, let me, we can get mired down in this stuff for a while. I understand that.
One of the areas for
I think obviously Ray was very successful in getting some conversation going here. For the benefit of everybody here, this board is obviously, there are 21 individuals here with some very, very strong and I think good concerns. And so nothing that is being shown right here, this is not going to be installed. We are always going to rely on our staff, we're always going to rely on the folks out there to come to some kind of agreement.
that we can live with. I've not been satisfied with the status quo up there. This is why we've gone through this entire exercise. It's taken a long time. Mr. Garcia and I have been here a long time, and we've seen this thing come and go, including the TVA. This is going to be an exercise that is going to be ongoing. It's going to have its flexibility. We all know that. So within that, I think the discussion is good. I certainly think it's healthy. And give some people out there some idea of the kind of problems that we have to, as a board, come to grips with as we discuss this. Nothing is set in stone. There's no plan out there that we're just going to automatically go through. We're going to discuss this, and we'll discuss it openly. But I think to the time, some of the kind of details we're going into right now, I think we need to get out of it a little bit and go on with what we've got here. In terms of the general overall idea, I think Wade's question was a valid question. I think we've got a little bit too far down into things. Let's stay in here. Go ahead.
I forgot where I was.
an overall plan, and you make a good point about getting into the minutia and trying to make decisions ahead of the game. Today, many of the decisions the board's been faced with and has responsibility to respond to are things that you basically just you don't have a plan or a baseline against which to judge your decisions. And it's not the board's fault, but it's a situation that we're faced with. And that's why we keep going back to the fact that you need to plan for your assets that will enable you, give you the knowledge to make the decisions down the road. I'm glad I had that address. Scenic Cove, again, Scenic Cove, in looking at in an overall plan, it's a gorgeous piece of land, and I think that needs to be taken into consideration. We are not recommending, and the intent was not to say, kick those people off and make them go away. The intent is there a higher and better use for that area? And there is, quite frankly. Now, does that mean that you say good riddance? Well, perhaps not. You know, certain individuals can be relocated to an area that's more suitable for what you want to do with your assets and what will increase the value of that land.
You talked about a relocation a couple of times today. Have you really looked into it, or are you just kind of saying, well, maybe we can relocate some people?
Oh, we have. Well, looking to relocate them?
Yeah, well, like, say, these people on these two-year leases, where would you recommend relocating some of them?
Well, until we actually sit down and pull out with the land plan, I don't know. Greg Martin, that's, you know, we can play YS, or we can say, give these guys some time. Let us go back and study. And right now, you're on a you know, kind of like, what is it, a month, or year lease with these
folks.
And that provides you flexibility to some extent. And this is not a new concept to the board.
No, that's just the first step for the relocation.
And again, it goes back to looking at the largest consolidation of your assets and trying to pull some plans together that make some sense for those assets. And when you do that, it'll give you a cornerstone against which to make decisions. Next slide, please.
I think that would be hard.
When we presented our plans with TBG, there was concern of the bridges and whatnot may impact certain numbers of cottage leases at various locations around the lake. That's what I'm saying right now until we study regional infrastructure requirements and capital expenditures and financing mechanisms. Is there an ability, is there a potential for a few numbers of lessees to be in the way? Yes, there is. That doesn't mean, again, that something cannot be devised that makes sense for everybody. Again, standard lake fees we've talked about across the board. It creates equality in all the fees that you're charged. and also offset some of your expense, and we're down to our recommendation for lower end of the market again, as you see in our study. Modified leases may result in increased rents. That is true, and remains below market. That is true. In some cases it is, in some cases it's not. As you saw in the graph, we're well below the 6% received market, well down the road. We talked about the impact of reselling of leases, lending institutions. Assumed rate of land appreciation may be arbitrary, yet remains market driven. That's absolutely the case. We've got to make assumptions. Not been involved in developing over 10,000 acres of land, and you've got to make an assumption that your land is going to increase to some extent. And all we can do is look at market across the country and benchmark it and make your assumptions and make your projections. And that's also why when you have map plans, they're revisited from time to make sure that you're managing to your goals and you're in line with the market.
On the bullet before that one, the one about the negatively impact lease, I thought with this new lease methodology was going to be more predictable, and so it was not going to be negatively impacted. Explain that to me. I thought I heard just the exact opposite when you were explaining this a little while ago. So
this modified lease may negatively impact resale leases?
Lending institution impact?
Okay.
That's an express concern. That's not the lease holder. So the response is that we think our lease is more predictable than they have today. It is financial. It's a big Bruce's explanation.
No, it's...
I guess I read it wrong. It looks like to me you're saying that it will negatively impact it, except I was under the impression it wouldn't. Is that just the wrong words on the bullet, or am I misunderstanding what that bullet is saying?
Well, the potential impact is that it may negatively impact resale leases.
I think that's more akin to the modified rental rate.
Yes.
I'll
get back into a somatic problem.
The way that the leaseholder is transferring, people are buying a perception that the lease rate is going to be very low for a very long period of time.
Okay.
So the second you start raising that, and you come to me and I'm going to buy that, now I'm going to say, no, wait a minute. A minute ago I was paying $1,000 a year, now I'm paying $2,000 a year. I'm not going to pay you as much as I would have before.
Okay. Well,
that's a good point. Leasehold estates out there are trading as if they're fee simple. They're not. And if you consider the value of the leasehold interest, which is typically not considered out there, people are overpaying dramatically for their leasehold estates.
May I say one thing that reminded me again, and I don't know if we get into it later, just my own clarification. On your market, your market rates, or whatever you want to call it, the MAI appraisal, are they doing it differently because it's not fee simple as opposed to just leasing it? Does that come into play any
place? I'm going to try to address that. The IRA is tax exempt. The county is required by the tax code. My lawyer's here, so if I say anything wrong, he's going to jump down my throat. According to the tax code, the county is supposed to levy taxes based on, in an instance where a tax exempt entity is leasing out property, the county is required to levy taxes based on the value of the leasehold interest, not the value, the fee simple value of the land.
Right.
So the county basically looks at a sale of, say, $500,000, assesses the improvements, discounts the improvements, and the depreciated amount of the improvements, and what's left over, they're putting on tax records and levying taxes against that amount.
But what I'm saying is, as an appraiser, if I go in and look at this land, do I have a different value as to its annual increase of 6% because it's just a lease as opposed to fee simple? Do appraisals make that difference, or do they just say it's all the same?
The value of the land is going to be the value of the land, regardless of its use. It's based on location, and other amenities, deep water.
Yeah, but that's not his question. His question is because it's
distraction as far as
sitting on that block of land. Land value doesn't change, I'm saying.
Okay.
But because it's sitting on something that is not pretty simple, is the MIA appraisal different or not? Very simple question. Good question, as a matter of fact.
Well, an appraiser, and I'm not an appraiser, let me tell you.
Maybe that's the answer. Maybe you don't know. Do you not know?
I do know.
Okay, tell me.
Well, any piece of land that's encumbered by leasehold estate, the value of that land is going to be less than it would be if it was free and simple.
Right.
Yes.
That's not how my appraisal was done. We need this. I got that directly from a MAI appraiser for Brand, Clinton, and Woman, and Fortnite, Mike Grant. That shit.
Okay.
I read it as if it was Steve Tyler.
Why? Did he not read it?
Excuse me?
If I'm at a bank, why would an appraiser give me something that's fee simple when it's not?
I don't know.
You know, this brings up a point that the board's going to have to determine, and that is, are we going to look at assessed values that the county provides, or are we going to take the recommendation of STARMAC and go out and get MAI appraisals? And Phil and I have talked about this because, you know, if we determine to use the MAI approach, then we naturally have to form some sort of arbitration system, which in turn is going to create more work for Phil and his staff. And, I mean, Phil, do you want to interject here?
I wouldn't like it, or I can interject, because when we bring this, when we talk to Karen about this, she says, you're foolish, and you're receiving an undervalue by going to the tax, to the way it is now. You're not able to ever get to the point to where you, to you get to the to increase your return on investment. Or is that?
That's right. Now I'll let Roscoe speak to the methodology that they use, but it's flawed, it's inconsistent, and it's not going to work using our rental methodology to get you the kind of return that we're trying to get to. You'll end up upside down. And that brings up another point I want to make, and it's going to wind up with it, but this, our plan is not meant to be piecemeal. It's not saying that it can't be tweaked. And we can't move roll up or down, or we can't move fees up or down. But it is it needs to be taken as a whole, because if you just pull out the rental rate section and then you start playing with the appraisals, or you use valuation as opposed to appraisals, and you don't charge fees, then you're right back where you started from. And I know we've said that before, but I can't emphasize that enough. And underneath it all is the land, as they say, but it's also the land plan. And every decision that's made should be based upon a well-thought-out land plan. So that's step number one. We've talked about this before, and we've kind of gotten pulled into what we originally proposed as a phase four, which is the synthesization of our recommendations into the reality. But we were asking you to make, you know, hard and fast statements, to give you what we think is going to happen in 10 years. We don't know all that yet. We're doing the best we can. But in some of these cases, and some of the questions that were being asked, we're getting quite a little bit before the horse. We can give you our best guess, but we don't know exactly what should happen with, you know, some of the subleases. We think it's wrong to sublease them long term, let a sublease go on long term. We have ideas and concepts with a firm underlying approach that we think is right and fair. But we are, if this is piecemealed and it's not allowed to evolve into a cogent plan over the next few months, then I'm afraid we're going to end up back where we started from. Yep. So, Roscoe, why don't you answer the question about the MII, about the evaluation, the county evaluation?
I understand that, but I'd be curious as to what the difference.
You know, talk a little bit about the differences that you've seen, and that we've had a slide in our last study that demonstrated very clearly, and I don't think we have them as backup slides.
The variances. Where to begin? When on phase two, we hired a group called Integral Realty.
Okay.
okay, spent a tremendous amount of money to understand the valuation system, and that flat out told us that the appraised values out there are unreliable. And why? Several things are going on. First and foremost is that that county is not assessing that land as fee simple. It's trying to assess the leasehold interest in that land. Those are very different. And what we found across the board in looking at over 500 actual sales out there is that what's on the tax rolls is substantially less than what the market is dictating. And you've heard it from a board member out there. We showed examples in phase two as well. Right, wrong, or indifferent, I think that the board needs to decide on if they trust the assessor values, and we advise them that they do not, hire an appraiser. Appraise a lot and make a comparison.
I think there's also been a misunderstanding about our recommendations for ongoing valuation. We're not suggesting that every 5 years all the properties are reappraised. Correct, Roscoe? Explain what you think, what our intent is.
Now, as I alluded to earlier, at this point, the BRA has sitting on a tremendous amount of assets and very valuable. But you don't know what it's worth. Flat out, the board does not know what it's worth. We can make guesstimates, but we recommend the board get an appraisal done, and then it knows what it's dealing with, and then it can very accurately make decisions that affect its return on those assets.
And in the future, appraise as necessary, but it's not a mandatory. Our recommendations do not recommend reappraising every 5 years. That would be very costly.
I mean, we are assuming that it increased 6% a year during that 5 years. That's
right.
And that's based upon a national average, or?
Well, it's easy.
Pardon?
National averages are running closer to appreciation on land properties than the
But historically, what's the what's Ikeda? Last
one. It's hard to say. If you look at just the land underlying the leases on the 2002 tax rolls, you were at $35 million. In 2004, you're close to $96 million. That's 300% increase. Now, and that is the assessment.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to say something.
Go ahead, Jean.
As far as getting the heart of the horse and asking questions at an inappropriate time, I don't think there's an inappropriate time to ask questions. That's why we're here.
Agreed.
We appreciate the effort and work that you put in to all the information that you provided, but these questions come to mind, and there is no inappropriate time.
Agreed. And I apologize if I offended you. I just want to make sure that we end up with a successful and quality product, and that we are not pushed into a response that we're not totally comfortable and has not been vetted. So
Lisa,
I understand.
We do not like to be pushed into a response by a developer, or whoever is
That's right. And that's what we want to encourage is this is your land. You deserve flexibility. You deserve to be able to treat it like a land.
Let me go back. I question I brought up the time before, and y'all passed through it. I'm not sure whether you intended to touch any more on it or not, but discount on appraised values, and I've been through appraised values representing a city and a higher appraisers, and I understand what that does, and also need that the court. You know how that works. Trust me, I've been there. I know how it works. But if we go with appraised value and somehow make that work, if we discount it at some value, in my own opinion, that's something better than a wild guess as to what that number is. But I don't know whether your number is high or low, and haven't formed an opinion of that, except I want more than what you've given me to make that as a basis. If you're just simply saying that's an assumption, there's several people sitting around this table that can take those numbers and manipulate the numbers. I can even do that. Is there more there or no?
The 6%?
Why 35%? Is it more of a discount basis? How is that other than a mathematical assumption?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
In our due diligence, we benchmarked against a variety of lake operators and landlords of various kinds throughout the country. There are a few that have a unique situation that is present that may possibly be liable. In those situations where we did find those landlords having different property where leaseholds existed, or in your church you have leaseholds, other river authorities here, if you have leaseholds, National Park System did not permit leaseholds. But in those situations that did have leaseholds where they entered into new longer term leases, there was a situation in the state of Illinois, there was another one very similar in Oklahoma, where discounts were given with the primary understanding that less savings or leaseholders had made significant investments between what was market rent and the discount that was present for the last 30 years, what we were talking about earlier as the present discount, and the need to amortize that investment over a period of time. We found that, and we ran the sensitivity test, starting this process at a 50% discount, 10% discount, a 90% discount, and we found that with a 35% discount, there was flexibility enough that it allowed lessees who have afforded last, we had some examples in the phase two study of where investments have been made over the last couple of years in buying these old interests versus what the actual value of the market rent would be and what is currently being paid. It allowed the at least a portion of that investment to be amortized over the 30-year term that we're proposing. Now, they didn't amortize the entire investment, but keep in mind that a lot of investments that have been made over the last 20 years have all already been amortized against the already discounted rent. So we ran a sensitivity analysis in 100 different ways, and we found that given the information that we had from lakes similar to Possum Kingdom and what we felt was an investment made by the leaseholders, that was a fair discount.
And you talked at length about the sensitivity of the leaseholder, and I'll go back to what I said a while ago. I wasn't here when this started, but when I got on board, I understood that part of this was because of an underperforming asset. Give me a little bit of wisdom on why it's an appropriate number from a BRA standpoint.
Why a discount at all?
That's a good starting point.
Why a discount at all?
I don't know what it is. Give me a basis for why that is, and what is this doing to it?
Could you pull up the slide at the beginning that had the yellow line? If you look at the graph.
Generally, the variations to what happens.
This represents the your projected income, and this shows at the 35% number, our recommended discount. And when this shows you get somewhere 50, the UI is up here, which basically is increasing rents to people
overnight,
sometimes substantially. And the reason is because when we started comparing assessed values to market values, we found that were much lower. So if you raise the bar against which you're assessing a rate, it's definitely going to be higher. Now, if you continue to use a lower value, then it will be lower. So we're raising it there, in some cases, 30 to 50%. And the intent of the 35% was to go to the next slide, please, a long term, was to try to minimize the impact, knowing that there's people that have lived a tremendous amount of invested dollars out there that need to be amortized over time. And what we try to do is come up with a number that is not going to create such a financial burden on the majority of the lessees out there. And that's basically what it is. You've got an input, you can change this number, and it'll just keep going up and down. Now, keep in mind there's a lot of assumptions there, like the appreciation of the land and so forth.
Practically speaking, there's some incremental adjustments that could be made that could have a positive impact, not create a hardship for the leaseholders, but also move that trend line, that yellow line, upwards sooner. From 35 to 40% discount, increase the minimum
rent paid from $500 to $750. Incremental changes, but nevertheless, a positive impact for you all.
Probably the most significant impact is handle the craft is simply the removal of that cap. We have some leases that are underperforming simply because the cap's 2,000. Cost of it's negative.
Regressive
methodology, because you're rewarding the lessees who have the more valuable leasehold interest by capping at $2,000. Some people have property that's worth $200,000 paying the same rent as some of property that's worth significantly less, $200,000. By removing that cap, you're already quadrupling the basis by which that rental is
What I'd like to do right now, if after a 10-minute break, we go on to let's talk about option 7. Is that a reasonable request? Let's take a short 10-minute break.
Make it an even worse idea.
We take our seat, please.
We didn't have copies either.
Okay. I wouldn't complain at a child. Well, I think we will going to take a break and look at the Phase 7 recommendations. And we are didn't bring the don't have a set of slides, and Roscoe's going to go pull it up from the laptop. So I guess we can start by taking questions regarding specific questions regarding Phase 7, and then. Option seven. And I think the biggest issue, or it seems to me like the biggest issue, is around the seems to be around the rental methodology. Any other specific questions about that? About?
Well, I think we need to discuss option 7.
Well, that is the. Option 7 is the real methodology that we have just put up on the screen, so. Okay.
Page 35.
Okay. everyone have option 7 in front of them?
I got one too.
Does anyone have a face report for option 7?
Page 35 in the physical safe phase 3.
Slide. Oscar, you want to finish your last slide again and we'll go into this then?
And Mike alluded to this earlier, that inspection standards are all manpower requirements. That's a fact. Building codes, however, they may result in construction and repair costs. That's a fact as well. Putting in codes and restrictions positively impacts the land value out there and then value of the improvements. And again, go back to the appraisal for baseline value. Clearly that's going to be an added expense to the BRA, but I think it benefits down the road it would be worth it for the BRA to have an understanding of the value of its assets. And I think that's the last slide.
All right, I've got a question, and Mike will lead into our next in option 7 here. We've all beaten around it. We've heard some comments. Let me ask the question one more time. Knowing that you're not an MIA, if I were an appraiser, which I'm not, and I walked in and I looked at fee simple land, okay, I'd appraise that land at a value. If I went in and looked at land that belonged to a federal to a state agency, and I would appraise that, I would appraise it based on the fact that that land would be subject to certain leases. Is that correct? So in that case, my appraisal of that land would be, I think you said, less than if you looked at fee simple. Is that what you stated? Okay, the encumbrance of power will reduce the value.
It reduces the marketability of land. It doesn't necessarily reduce the basis or the value of the land itself. But it's marketability. There are two different things to be looking at. One point is if it's being marketed for sale with an encumbrance, it reduces both.
Okay, so the BRA, okay? I don't care about it, the whole universe. This BRA right here. And we're asking someone to appraise our property. Is that property that would be appraised, will be subject to obviously the encumbrances, and therefore will be something less than that same property at fee simple? Would that be a good general statement? Okay, so let me take the next step. If that is somewhat sound, then when you talk about property in Texas and around the United States going up 15%, 20%, you're talking about fee simple, are you not?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you have that same escalation rate if you were talking about land that was subject to encumbrances that by their own terms might increase also? Would you then be looking at the value of land going up less than the average of what is going up around you on a fee simple basis?
I think that varies based on the flexibility of the lease, the various terms of the lease, primarily the rental rate that's in place. And if you're talking specifically the BRA leases, the thing that
comes to mind in particular with the our Possum Kingdom leases is the short duration of the existing lease window and the BRA's flexibility of instilling or implementing a new rental rate policy every 5 years or as often as the board meets every 2 years, I believe, on rental rate policy. So it mitigates some of the impact of a lease on the marketability of the property, not totally. And your point is valid that an encumbrance on the land is going to decrease its value. If it's an above market rent, in which case the BRA has the ability to implement an above market rent, it would increase the marketability or the value of the land. So I think there are a lot of factors that are weighed into establishing a fair market appraisal of the property, one of which is encumbrances. Did I totally not do waters here?
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to think from the standpoint, if I was the lessee sitting down in the audience listening to this. And I'm trying to figure out, and we talked about 30 years and going to the bank and all that other stuff. But I don't believe that we've hit the central issue. It's not the bank so much that they have something to look at and they know what the lease is for 30 years. It's the person who's trying to pay for it, trying to convince the banker. And the banker's sitting there saying, well, you're on a fixed income. How much is it going to go up for the next 30 years? That's the question that I see is worrying so very many people. I mean, if I'm a banker, I know for 30 years I've got this, and I run the numbers too. But is the folks wanting to go in and finance that on a limited amount of income? That's the worry of a lot of folks out there. And I'm trying to get from there to what is a potential increase of this fair market value over that 30-year term. And you use 6% Roscoe as an example. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to figure, and then you talk about the national average being, in some case, 20% on waterfront, but that's fee simple. We're not in fee simple, we're at BRA. So I'm trying to bring those two things together. In my own mind, that's what I'm trying to do.
That's an excellent point. The one thing that you got to keep in mind is leasehold interests out there trading at the same prices as fee simple. So people are willing to pay for leasehold interest the same that they would pay for land. And the increases in values are shown in the sales prices of those properties. Yet the BRA's return on its asset remains suppressed.
Well, can I expound a little? What I heard, the most important thing that I heard y'all give us is that you listened to the people at Possum Kingdom and you took into effect the people, took into account the people that have been long-time residents and that want to remain long-time residents. Correct? And in doing so, we need to keep in mind that we have maximum of 20-year mortgages in place because there's no other institution that's loaning for 30 years. So now we have an opportunity to get a 30-year lease in place, and I don't foresee people going out and refinancing their mortgages, but we're talking about people that already have mortgages in place. So to some extent, it's going to be, unless there's a clause in their loan that says if they do a new lease, it has to be approved by the lender. I mean, do you know if that's in there, Pollard? Would that be standard? Yeah, if they were going to modify the lease, they had to have lender approval. Okay, and then look at the fact that, and Roscoe, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't actually get a 3% return on our asset until year 15. So we've covered those people with 20-year mortgages for the first 15 years of the lease. Would you agree with that statement?
I would agree with that.
That the increases are not substantial enough to the point in the first half of the deal. And what I hear people saying is, yeah, gosh, if you looked at what my lease payment could be 30 years down the road, there's a lot of things that we're not taking into consideration. I mean, I had a guy call me the other day, and he said, if your values go down, does that mean my lease payment goes down? And I said, if we base it on market value and your value goes down, then yes, your payment goes down. So the other thing we're not taking into consideration is, you know, the present value of money and what a dollar is going to be worth 20, 25, 30 years down the road. So I think the biggest part of the pill to swallow for folks in the audience have not been the first 15 years, but it's been the last 30 years. So can you help explain the relationship between the market increases and your philosophy in doing what you've done there? And you and I talked about this last week. In any part of your process, did you say, let's just look at a flat return, if somebody wanted to do a fixed return, what that return would be if the BRA wanted a similar net present value return on their money? I thought that was a lot. Did you catch all that?
How does, let's go to your first question, how do we take into consideration market appreciation for the last 15 years? Well, all we can do is base assumptions on historical facts that we know and other benchmarks, and we came up with a 6% projected into the future. Nobody in this room can say whether that's going to happen or not with any degree of certainty. Well, all we can do is look to the past and look at the market conditions. We know that there's a finite number of acres on the shoreline out there, and you control that. We also know there's a tremendous amount of pressure for development around that water. Now, just those two pieces of information in and of themselves would tell you that down the road there's going to be increased demand to get on the shore. Personally, I think it's probably going to be in excess of 6%, but to be conservative, I think projecting at 6% annual appreciation is probably a fair and valid assumption.
Development takes place on the lake, you could have negative pressures on the market because there's additional development in which that demand can be absorbed. So there are pressures going both ways, making it very difficult to say that with any certainty it's going to be a 6% or 10% increase in value. I mean, there are a lot of things that need to be weighed.
The 3,000 lots coming on the market, would you think that would affect the market value?
Oh, absolutely. There's going to be an impact. You know, clearly, it's hard to project real estate cycles out in the future. We can sit here and hypothesize that if you increase lease rates to a certain degree, would somebody abandon their leasehold or opt to go to the Willingham and buy a lot? Maybe, maybe not. If all the leases leave and go and buy fee simple, then what does that do to the market? Well, it's certainly going to affect the value of those the leasehold interest because their marketability is going to go down if they have other options. Over time, I think, though, because you're sitting on the shoreline, the pendulum may swing back. You know, those cycles and those peaks and valleys are very difficult to predict. And keeping that in mind, you know, for the next 20, you know, we started off a majority of these leaseholds, I think the actual lease payment will go down and stay relatively flat along with what you guys have in mind or have adopted right now. Substantially for the next 15 or 20 years, less than what the TVA suggested. And again, this is all predicated on trying to get the BRA to what is dictated as a market, and we did not dream up that market 6% rate over time.
So your bottom line is option 7 is beneficial to the people who have been there for a long time and want to be there a long time. And it's not detrimental from a financing standpoint.
That's not fair. It's a loaded question.
That's correct.
Okay.
I want to go back to the curve, to your plots up there. They were on percent, well, they weren't in percent, but how do we establish the value of the land to begin with? Do we go to the appraisal district, or do we do our own? What is your...
we recommend that you have an appraiser establish a baseline value of your land today. Down the road, whether or not you choose to continue to reappraise the lots on every lease cycle, that's not necessary. But the way that the values on the assessors are done right now, they're kind of they're ambiguous, and they're not consistent. And I think just the fact that there is this question of assessed value versus appraised value should warrant an appraiser to put the issue to bay.
I've had several discussions with appraisal districts, and you're right.
And so have we. And there's arguments, all over the board where this is concerned, but I think as a prudent steward of the land, you need to know what the value is, period. And the decisions that you make relative to lease rates against that is up to this board. But, in looking at it, we've made our recommendations and certainly stand by them.
How much would an appraisal like that cost? Maybe you've already said that and I just missed it.
$200,000 to $300,000.
It's $200,000 to $300,000. It's about $200 or $300 a lot. We've got some scope of work from some appraisers. Depending on whether you want, there's a couple ways to approach it. They can do what's called a mass appraisal, which they basically segregate the lots out and they kind of put certain areas of similar properties, and then they kind of apply some metrics. That's not as accurate as doing it lot by lot. That's the other option. One is more expensive. The other one is more accurate. So the scope of work that we received from Integra is between $219 and $319 per lot, and I think it'll take about 6 months.
But John, I listened to these things, and we're looking for an exact science. This thing about an exact science, remembering that this whole problem with this lake and this property is based on a Delaware lake, which we may or may not have total control of. I've been around with this stuff a long time, and I woke up and they try to go back to a river. And then I've been around with this stuff with the lake and it wasn't 14 feet. The point I'm getting at is that we cannot expect Starbuck or anybody else to give us an exact science around a property. If we will be faced with a drought situation where that lake was down back to a river, we may be faced with a drought situation or flood situation where that lake has to be flooded, and that was the point of getting is that the economy of that lake dictates future can impact positively or negatively the future of that lake and these properties and value. Again, it's not as sure as we can have here. So I think that what these folks have brought forward here is a standard starting point. We appraise something, we move with it, recognizing that there's potentialities over which we may not have any control. And they must also recognize that there might be some potentialities or value that we will not be able to control or help or assist with. And it's something we need to keep in mind as we move forward, that this is a governor lake. And we may own the properties and argue about them all day. But the whole economy appears to be based around this lake. And it's something we have to be cognizant of, that I don't come under one responsibility as a manager of that lake. As the legislature intended for flood control and to control floods and to also store water in there for fish water for the future growing population of the state. That's our number one responsibility. And those other things are ancillary to our real mission. The record being talked about the quality of water, I totally agree. We've had a crisis of fresh water, not only in this state but in this nation. And then all these things are important, and they're finally damaged, but we have to consider everything we do. How does it impact that lake, and how does that lake impact on them? That's something we cannot control.
There's another thing, too, Steve.
he's right, because we can't control it. We may wake up in the morning and find out that the habitat of the rare three-eyed blind green spider only extends 3 miles around the shoreline of PK. And it's so protected that you can't even walk across the front yard because you might step on one. That's going to affect the economics. And we have no control over something like that.
I could all of a sudden, for example, I was out in Lebanon, and all of a sudden a thing called the Balcones Wildlife Preserve was created by the federal government. And that the big headline, it encompassed literally all of Lebanon. Now, how did that impact us? Well, it impacted us this way. We have to pay $2,500 a lot before any development on it for a wildlife biologist to sit on that dock for a week and figure out if we're going to get blind spiders or wild or blue barbers or something. The point I'm getting is that we're sitting on a government lake that we may or may not have. Say, for example, Fed decides that the shoreline management thing is going to be 100 feet from the shoreline. We may have no control over things like that. But point of view, we cannot guarantee the value of land around that lake. There's so many potentialities that may be totally out of our control.
Very good points. Absolutely. Comments? Here I have a question. You mentioned earlier that this is one piece. It can be tweaked here and there, but you can't take it apart and remove what you like and what you don't like. This is, I'm not trying to look into the future, but I want to ask a question. Future boards will be here, and they'll look at whatever we leave them to look at. And if they, with whatever the criteria is there, if they decide to slow the rate of the leases down to conform with this because the value's risen so fast, what does that do with to the overall land plan or anything else? I mean, does your recommendation include that kind of flexibility, that tweak?
Yes, I.
For instance, if 6% is 20%,
right.
Could boards bring that back down to 6%?
Well, our analysis is based upon an average return and value that we're estimating to be 6% of market. And we generally think we know what market is. So the number that we've plugged in is, what, 95 million or something? I don't know what we've used. It's 158 million. As long as you do this, our approach is going to work as long as you're able to generate that kind of return. So if the market is up to 20% and that's unreasonable and it's a hardship, maybe there's a time at which you have to rethink the strategy, but if you have to look at the overall return that we've pegged in order for economics to make sense over 30, 50 years.
It's a function of everything, including the marketability.
Exactly.
So then there is some flexibility.
Certainly.
And it may be that that 6% should be on new developments on land that's not encumbered by leases, and it should be something else on what we have all our problem leases. Got to. We're trying to make it one big pie, and it's got everything in that. Mm-hmm. Has to be treated the same.
I think, and this is just me speaking, I really do think some kind of an appraisal that will bring in all of our concerns from the outside, because we've all lived in places where we know what appraisal districts do for political reasons, for what, a number of reasons. They have to do what they have to do. But some kind of a look from an outside source that says, here's what it is. I think we'll answer a lot of our questions.
I agree and I disagree. I think an appraisal of the land that doesn't have leases would be useful and valuable. Appraisal of the existing leases and lease sites, I think, just adds to the uncertainty of what we got with all the problems we have that have been in existence for 50 years.
Well,
I guess what I was trying to, as part of the thing I was trying to say a while ago, my experience with appraisals, though, is that if you think that sheet of paper is the answer to all, you're kidding yourself, because that isn't the final answer. The final answer is somewhere in court after it gets challenged or whatever. If all it takes is one person to challenge it, you're going to be there, either through a lawsuit or some procedure to settle that out.
Yeah.
It is another piece of information, I grant you that. But it's not the end all.
No. No. Well, I agree. And I guess that goes along with what I'm saying, that to appraise the leasehold sites, I think, doesn't add a whole bunch. To appraise the sites that we're talking about future development on, I think that would be valuable.
Well, let me ask this question, and this is a crystal ball question. You're assuming all future BRA development would be at a 6% rate. Isn't that correct? 6% market value. That the discount is only offered to the people currently under lease. With the developments that the BRA has in front of it now, assuming no one else comes up and says, I want to develop something. How long do you think till we would have the ability to actively pursue growth outside of, you know, what we have now, future development?
That's assuming that all four of the developers we heard from go forward.
Yeah. Are we 10 years down the road?
Easily. I said probably have that. That's because in speaking with Syntex of the world, and they're projecting a 100 to 200 lot sales a year. Syntex in the audience, please. You know, and if they're all projecting 100 to 150 units lots sell per year. You're dealing with a long time. Of course, you are. I think the thing about some of the developments that are on the board right now is there's price differentials that would actually help create different product for different people. And so you're not going to have complete competition against each other from what I've seen. But yeah, you're talking about the long term. This is
150 and 3,000, that's 20 years. And that's 20 years of loss.
Given that, also, I mean, you just need to go Google Possum Kingdom Real Estate, and you can read the studies published by the local real estate companies and say the market's hot. And it's good. They had the best year 2005 ever. Real estate spring.
There is my Niagara Lake property all over.
Well, I think I sent you some numbers, and it was from just one real estate company, so when you factor in the other real estate companies up there, there's probably a 1.5 to 2% turnover a year just on BRA leases average.
Probably closer to 10%. So I think it was 140 last year. That's all rather here sent numbers on just the peninsula, is that correct?
Yeah, just the peninsula. So, I mean, that's, we need to take into consideration that if we had 2% a year over 5 years, in 5 years we've got, what is that? I'm sorry, my math's not working right now. But that's a pretty good number of leases that are going to be jumped up to that 6%. Or the discount, without the discount, 35, 40, 45, whatever, it'll be 3, 4, 5, so... We need to keep that in the back of our minds.
Again, that depends on what the present motivation is for those leases. Some may, quite frankly, the leases out there today are a commodity, and they're being used as a commodity, marketed as a commodity, not necessarily just as leases. And people are profiting from the sale of those leases as a commodity. And one of the things that
Well, and one of the gentlemen earlier today said, you know, market value is what a willing buyer will buy and what a willing seller will sell. And I know a lot that just sold, it was
a lease lot. It had a swim dock and a shack on it, and shack, a smaller home. And it sold for $300,000, and they took out the swim dock and put in, you know, a very expensive swim boathouse thing, and they tore the house down and put a $1 million home on it. So basically $300,000 was went to purchase a lot, and I think that lot on the assessed values for 04 was just over $100,000. So, you know, there could be a huge disparity between market or MAI appraisal versus county assessment.
Let me follow that up on that particular case. I was going to say if I went there and got a new lease, let's take up his example there. Now, what would we charge? What would be the basis for a lease on that example?
That's what makes it very difficult to come up with the exact one size fits all lease around methodology. Because in a situation like that, where in order to amortize that investment, you have to offer a much more significant discount than somebody who's been sitting on a piece of property and has made no leasehold investment. They've been on the property as leaseholders for 40 years. Their amortization needs are considerably less. Simply put, they're just not able to market that discounted rent tomorrow under the new lease rate methodology as they were yesterday. So, striking a happy medium is where we ended up with on a 35%. I don't know if I'm answering your question. A brand new lease?
Why would you figure out his lease on what he's willing to
pay? He's invested.
I mean, that's my problem with the appraisal district is that I buy it for one thing and then they jack it up on some imaginary number. But if I have enough money to pay that much, I would be have enough money to pay
the rent. That rent would be based on the appraised value, which in this case is probably either the $200,000 or the $300,000. It's what the appraiser values it at, and it would be at 3% of that.
Can I ask you a question? At the point that he bought it for $350,000, wasn't there an appraisal at that point for the financial institution to make some kind of move on that $1.3 million investment?
Not if you paid cash. Not if you paid cash.
More than likely, he did.
I don't know.
Really you know, 6 million down there for us, they're going to pay cash to each other, not because he could get a bigger return on his money investment.
Yeah.
Or something there, but it's. I can see trying to accommodate the existing, you know, because they were led to believe whatever. This guy comes in and says, I've got so much money and I'm going to spend it. Why am I going to give him a whatever discount?
To me, this is a simple answer because on each transaction, you're going to have a financial institution appraisal based on the loan justification on that. There's your appraisal for your lease starting at that point with a new lease. Whatever the bank will pay for that.
Well, option number 7 is what's been recommended. And it's what we paid significant dollars for. And I'm curious from my fellow directors if option number 7 is acceptable or if we have a lot of issues regarding option number 7. I mean, I've heard some.
My issues probably go the opposite direction than yours. Mine is why the delay in jumping to 6 and why the discount.
Okay.
I was out sitting on a piece of land, and the landlord came to me and said, I'm raising your rent 300% next week. How much I can do about it?
Well, other than the fact that we have leases in place that we have.
We honor the leases we have to honor.
Part of the incentive to go to the new, to get them the new rate, is to get them on new leases. So where you may feel like we're giving some, we're also getting some. So I'm just curious where everybody feels on it because I'm having a hard time getting a read personally. If option 7 is acceptable or if option 7 is not acceptable.
Well,
Let me just say something. Using the assumptions they use with the discount starting at 65% over the next 30 years, I think, and then saying, though, you know, that's what we could expect, we'd be happy with that. I think that you can probably take a number of scenarios where you can arrive at the same dollar amounts per year and not have to do an appraisal every year of some outside party coming in and muddying the water. I mean, it's just a, I mean, you use the 6% thing, but I don't know if you really have to reappraise it every year.
Well, my only concern with, and it's not with option 7, my concern is with the MAI appraisal, because then the BRA is going to be put into place and Phil is going to be dealing with people that say, well, you say it's worth 200, I'm going to go get a guy, and he says it's worth 100, and then we've got to have another big arbitration, and then if we don't come to an agreement, then we've got people saying, well, I'm not paying it, I'm going to sue you, yada, yada, yada. So I want to think this out, and I want to talk this out, because I don't want to do this again. And I don't want to, we've created a monster over time, and I don't want to swap that monster for another monster. You see what I'm saying? And I, personally, I like the MA appraisal. I think it's probably more fair than what the county's doing. It may be a little more. It may not. I don't know. But I think it will take into consideration more aspects of the individual lots than the county does. I think the county kind of puts a blanket assessment on a lot of things and doesn't take into consideration whether it has deep water or how much frontage or whatnot. But I'm trying to get a feel for option 7.
I have a question about any option, but option 7 in particular. And it's kind of a broad question, and it's probably something that can't be answered today because we're not that far along. But just to, we see that there's a negative impact to the BRA when you initiate option 7, a negative financial impact. I read that somewhere, short term. I wasn't sure, maybe 2 years or something like that. And then if you add to that the cost of engaging a management firm. What is the financial impact on the short term for the BRA? And how does that relate to our operations at the lake and system-wide if we're short on the operations there and they're not paying for themselves? Then where do we find the money within the system to keep us going until we have a positive financial return?
There was also other recommendations for fees and other items that made up some of that also.
Some of it, do we know?
I don't remember the exact numbers right now, but I know that there was some mitigation of that through us re-looking at fees.
I remember it was about
65,000 just this year in low stickers, so that's part of it, increase in fees.
I wasn't sure if that increase was considered possible. A little more detail. So, if you know you're going to have a negative impact, you need to know how much and how you're going to fill that void, and how that's going to affect the operation, the PK and system.
Okay. Suzanne, comments?
One thing I was thinking about is, we want to keep our goals clearly in mind, and the startup company keeps talking about adopting the plan as a whole. And as far as the leases are concerned, we talked about the 6%, but the goal is to get the full market value. They've just estimated the 6%. Now, if we want to stay at the 6%, we can give them a definite amount in 30 years. If our goal is to get the market value, then we're going to have to go with appraisals.
Good point.
If we want something definite for the lessees, then, you know, we can say, okay, we'll go to 6% and we'll adjust the value of your property. But as I understand the plan from the startup company, our goal is to get our leases at full market value. So, am I not understanding that right?
Yeah, it's in the future.
In the future. In the 30 years.
So I think you're right.
Yeah. So I have some confusion over, oh my, what if the market value, the appraisals go boom? Well, if that's our goal, you know, when we adopt that, but if our goal is to hold the top rate at 6%, then we're going to have to adjust our appraisals.
Well, I think that's what it says, though, is that we adjust the appraisals every 5 years.
We adjust them, but don't we adjust them to market? Is that how I'm understanding it? 6% is just an estimate.
Oh, okay. You mean 6% return on the asset?
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that the market returns change. We may have to change our market, our market-based return.
Or I think what you're saying is it's possible to institute a rental increase cap of 6% growth per year.
Right.
And that's
every single long-term lease that I've dealt with, or ground lease, the owners have always not reaped the benefit of market value at the end of that term. It's always been way undervalued. I have never seen one that's actually been projected with certain fixed increases that has actually kept up with the market.
Right.
So, I think that's been some of the concern with, you know, do we put a fixed rate on it and say, okay, we're going to be at 5% for 30 years. I think the concern has been that, you know, at the end of 30 years, the market value is such that we've left a lot of money on the table.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like all the rest of us, probably everyone at this table, your tax base has gone way up on your, whatever you own, your house, your business. I mean, we've all got caught in that crunch. You know, we bought it for one thing, and now all of a sudden the appraisal is three times what we paid for it. Same thing the lessees are facing. It's no different. It's no different. So, they're probably going to not know exactly what their lease payments are after a few years. So, either we decide to cap it or we go with that other scenario.
What other scenario?
Well, I'll just let it float with the market.
Oh, okay.
Appraisals.
But keep in mind, if you do cap it, you're talking about what we have now, not the future.
Exactly. I'm not suggesting we do that. I'm just saying.
I mean, we're talking about capping 20% of the land that we have available for developing projects and what have you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But then you got a known cost or a cap. Perhaps you can plan for that.
Right. I don't see any of these other options that I think are any better than 7. Do y'all see any other options that you think are better, or do you have a different idea?
My concern, in all of this stuff, we use some common sense and flexibility and the ability that the staff tweak and future boards have some latitude in there. But we've all been saying, nobody has a crystal ball here.
Right.
But I think that for future planning, if you can stay in what you're trying to do there, where you're trying to get, I think that's a reasonable approach. Is it the best? I can't tell you that.
Mr. Chairman, it is not a perfect situation. Nothing will be. It's created by men. But I think that we have strived to accomplish three things involved here. not only the property management part, but the building study, the shoreline management, but all three are integrated in this one community up there particularly. Are they perfect? No, they're not. But I think that approaching all three as we have done with the best brains we could hire to do these things, like we'll do our legal work and we'll do our engineering work. We'll strive mightily to actually bring in professionals that have the credentials to back up their conclusions, which is why I like ours too. I develop businesses. And I think here we have a situation where we've arrived at a point where once we have reached the conclusions of the best bands we could hire, then we're obligated to really take a look and get involved and get them done. Because otherwise, we're going to go back to opinions rather than facts. We're going to go back to opinions rather than science. And I think we're supposed to put together what I consider to be a very fine scientific financial model of something we can manage and handle. Remember that we're talking about from here, wherever this goes from here, we're talking about augmenting our staff with a professional management firm, like we do Judge Baker and our legal help, or we do whatever the engineering firms we have. We always augment our staff with the best that we, the board, can provide them. And I think in this particular case, not only we're providing them a roadmap, we're providing them a plan. It was put together by the best folks we could find. After complication, obviously, we're going through all the process. And I think it's time to put this thing to rest. I like option 7 of the version.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, comments or opinions?
I think option 7 is a reasonable way to look at this. I don't think we're going to find a perfect way. I think I said last time that I was surprised at how close we were for the majority of the leaseholders over the first 5 years, not to put an excessive burden on those folks. And that's what I was really interested in, that we be as fair as we can to the people who hold leases. And we have to move on a reasonable return on our assets. And if we try to go directly to that 6%, then that will put a big burden on the folks that have leases today. So the discount method will help to reduce that burden over a period of years. And so, to me, that's why I think option 7 is the one we ought to go to. Do I think it's perfect? I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's better than any of that I've seen before. And I think the whole reason we're into all of these studies, not just this methodology, but the whole thing is to give staff some basis for making decisions, so they don't have to bring all those decisions to the board. And so to get a good methodology in place that we can say, this is our methodology, this is what we're going to follow, it's as fair as we can be to the leasees and to BRA, then that's what we need to be doing. And so, yeah, I believe option 7 is the way to go at this point.
Yeah. I was very told, Mr. Chairman, I believe I agree with Tim. We're trying to correct a 65-year deficit problem here, and I've heard 21 different opinions around the table. We have a group here that spent a lot of money and a lot of time trying to come to closure on this. So we need to draw a line in the sand and begin somewhere. And we're not rocking future boards over that we decide to go, because we're making decisions ourselves. Future boards can lay on the same problem and adjust as necessary, because things are going to change. Market conditions are going to change. Economy's going to change. Up or down, we hope it's up. I'm basically a buyer, not a seller, so I don't have all the real estate experience out here. But that's got to change, and we need to give the staff something we're taking. Begin with here, take the study, take option 7 with its flaws and also with its positive aspects, and just move forward, make a decision. Much better than not making a decision, kicking the can, for another board or another year without having, but lock in on something, because we can always adjust it. We can always make a change. So, Ray's done a hell of a job in trying to wrap his arms around this. He's got much longer arms than he started with, for sure. But he's doing his committee. He's done a great job.
Thanks.
Let's move on.
Anybody else? Y'all have anything? Call back. I appreciate it.
Can I
go ahead?
I have one more issue.
Okay.
And Karen's going to laugh at me because I'm the road guy. We have discussed over the last 2.5 years that I've been here that we have an issue with the roads at Possum Kingdom, that we are maintaining roads for the benefit of the county without county dollars. And whereas your report doesn't specifically address the roads in regards to immediate repairs and or turning over to the county, I'd like to ask the staff to knock something around. And this is just if y'all don't like this, please speak up. We know we have 60 miles of road. I'd like to see what kind of budget numbers we're talking about if we were to bring 6 miles a year up to county standards over the next 10 years. And at the end, Roscoe, you're cringing, at the end of each year, that 6 miles be turned over to the county. And if the county will not accept that road, then the maintenance thereafter is going to have to be a part of an assessment that goes back to the folks at PK. I think, hopefully, that will give them some incentive to work with us in regards to the voting capability that they have up there to get people in office that are going to work with us. Ken, did I just cut your feet out from under you?
What about law enforcement patrol? And,
I'm going to defer to Director Bayon for any and all comments and concerns that go to trash pickup. I mean, Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, we do it back for trash pickup, and it's pretty much a washout or very close to. So we can modify that to make it, you know, if we're spending $1, we're getting $1 in return. But we really need to look at a fix for the roads. And I'm not saying do it all in one lump sum, but I know we've had a plan to do maintenance every year, and I'd like to step it up a little bit and see if we could do, you know, and maybe we only do 3 miles a year, and it's a 20-year process. But we need to set some kind of a goal where we know there is an end to the money we're spending on these roads. So, Frank, I just ask you to work with me on that and help me with some recommendations. I mean, does anybody have any comments or concerns on that? Am I out of line?
No, you're right on track.
You're totally on line. Your water code allows you to do things like that. It is necessary to assess whatever fees are necessary to manage our properties.
Yeah, I want to start working on some solutions for that. It's my pet project. Anything else? Baker.
Yes, I have a couple more questions for Starbuck Company, just on the overall progression. I'm using like next steps, under next steps timeline, the four recommendations. One, revise the leasing process that we just talked about. Two, adopt a master plan for Possum Kingdom. And I had, and it's the boat loading study, the shoreline management study, and then resource utilization plan that you find out. Is this something, Phil, we're considering at the meeting on the 22nd?
No.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and ask it. Adopt a portfolio management strategy, and then back over here, you know, on a previous section, that portfolio management strategy includes a detailed qualification, baseline valuation, and then assigns financial considerations to the master plan, internal and projected capital requirements and revenue to support the BRA budget planning processes, and so on. Who do you see implementing that? Our staff? I know part over here in Next Steps is to hire a professional management company, but who do you see doing the portfolio management strategy that ties this back to our budget planning?
We staff, it could be a management combination.
Okay. Okay. But when you say under four, utilize a professional management company to manage the assets, does that include the portfolio management or just the land management? That includes the whole thing tied into our budgeting process. Okay. So a management company we hired would work with staff to tie in what we're doing there to our budget process. Okay.
Dr. Baker, is that you get your questions answered?
Yes.
Okay. I have a question. How many people do we have right now that take advantage of the 65 or over or homestead exemption?
130. I think that actually are both 65 and over homesteads, around 130 out of the 1,500. Less than
10%. Less than 10%? Okay. Well, I don't think that was specifically addressed in the Spotlight report. I know I asked the question, and the general recommendation was that we don't provide a discount. Personally, I don't know if, and you know, I know what you're saying. I hope this is a tweak and not a deviation from the plan, but I'd like to see some sort of a discount or something for those folks that are over 65 and homesteaded. I mean, because they did it through taxes and because they've had it currently on BRA leases, I'd like to see if we could extend that, especially under the assumption that we've got less than 10% right now.
I have to ask a question on that, because by then we've got 167. But every year people have birthdays, that may be 300. So as you move up and you have 65, do you go on, or is it for the initial 167? Or you have to make some kind of decision.
Okay. Okay. Do you have any thoughts or comments, or are you about to throw something at me?
Yeah, I think that all of us are maybe 65.
Some of us are.
I would give anything if I was going to be 65.
I would look at it. Maybe you're going to have a bunch of over 65 out there, and that just because you're over 65 does not necessarily indicate that you have a hardship. And I don't know if there was a way to determine hardship versus very specific. I think that might be difficult sometimes.
Okay. But remember, it's age and homestead status, right?
Yeah,
only have one homestead.
Yeah.
So it's permanent party.
Yeah, that's true.
And as people have the beneficiaries, hopefully the beneficiaries will be under 65, except for the wives.
Karen,
can you use the microphone, please? Let me ask you this.
Thank you. I was saying earlier that it does seems more appropriate if you're going to look at discounting, it would be some sort of lower income situation as opposed to just someone that's simply over 65. That might be and it'd be their primary residence. I don't think you should do that for a second home. And the people get the home, they get the homestead advantage over 65 if it's a primary residence anyway. So that's one of the reasons we did not recommend any kind of additional discount.
Are you saying then that you could look at, you know, an income that falls below a certain percentage over 65 homesteaded then?
Sure, that's something that you could consider. I think that's more appropriate than just across the board over 65. It just depends if it becomes a management situation. And once again, I think it should just be for primary residents.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, we'll close this section. Thank you very much, Barbara.